Good evening, everybody. I'm Rick Dancer. Welcome to Get Real with Rick Dancer. I'm excited tonight. We've been holding off for 8 months because we wanted to make sure that Betsy Johnson was all calmed down after her run for governor. And I actually called Betsy and said, would you go on? It was like just a few months afterwards. And she goes, Rick, give me some time here. She goes, I've heard other people, other candidates, we won't say who, running for the same position who've gone on, and I don't want to sound like that. So we've been waiting. But let me get our advertisers out of the way real quick. Fairway Independent Mortgage Corporation, Greg Hinkle, he's a lender. He's right here in Helena, Montana. He also can do lending in Oregon and Washington, and he believes in what we do. He said to me the other day, you know, Rick, I get business off you, but I don't even expect it. I just want to support free speech. And that's the kind of people we're looking for to help us out with what we do here. And also the guy who cares about free speech more than anyone I know, Chris Stendel, Family Dentist. Dr. Michael Bratlin, they take care of your dental needs, and he doesn't care what your political needs are. He just takes care of folks. And that's what we need more of. More people who are just willing to speak out. I was having a conversation with Bratlin this morning saying, you know, I think we need to do some radical radio ads about this Jason Aldean thing and all the brouhaha going on. But Betsy Johnson joins us. Oh, it is so good to see you.
All calm down is not exactly how I would characterize my state of mind. And if you're talking about radical dental ads, that thing that looks like a drill made my molars hurt. So Dr. Bratlin is the best. He is a great American.
He really, you know, I was listening to a podcast. I'm a big fan of Jordan Peterson, and I was listening to it while I was running around the ponds here in Montana. And they were talking about and I thought of you today. They were talking about there's very few people in your circle. You need to have at least four people who are courageous and brave and will step out and say what they really believe, because otherwise we're just going to go nuts. And I thought, you know what? I've got people like you. I've got Dr. Bratlin. I've got a couple other friends who really, you know, the guy says, well, if four people like you, who cares if 4 million hate you? You got four friends. And I went, yeah, you know, I mean, that's what I wanted to talk with you about. How are you doing 8 months after losing the race for governor in Oregon? What are you thinking? What's going on in Betsy Johnson's brain?
Well, what an interesting setup, because before I answer that question, and I will answer it wholly and completely and honestly, I want to say it's not just the people that will stand up and say something. You got to follow through. Yeah. You got to do what you say. And for 20 years, that's all our office did. I would dare somebody in the Oregon legislature, Republican, Democrat, Communist, Working Party, to find an office that worked harder in taking care of their constituents than we did. And we didn't just do the intake call and fill out a card and drop it in the file. God damn it, we ran it to ground. And then right. If we got success, we called them back and we shared the success with the person that asked us for help. And if we couldn't get there from here, we called him back and said, we moved mountains and it's your problem's insoluble.
So did you learn that technique from a Senator Mark Hatfield?
I learned it from Senator Mark Hatfield, and I learned it from my own dear father, who was a state representative for 7 sessions and then was mayor of Redmond. And my favorite Sam story, that was my father, was that he presided over putting in sewer in Redmond, and some lady had the in construction sewer thing blow up in her bathroom. And she called Sam and she said, your sewer just blew up in my bathroom. And I thought, you know, that's the kind of constituent services when they've got your phone number. I didn't see him going over there with a plumber's friend and fixing it, but he cared enough that people could find him, and he was empathetic, and he dispatched the right guys to fix shit later, literally in that case. But the long and the short of it is you got to find people with some stones, that's to begin with. And then the next thing is you got to see it through to a conclusion. And so that's the segue into what am I doing? Well, the day after the election, I woke up with a hell of a hangover and waited around until about noon and then said, that shit happens and let's get back at it. And so things in my life haven't changed very much. I don't have a title, and I understand that my contact list will cool down over time. but I've worked very compatibly with the woman that replaced me. And so when I call up a state agency and say, I'd like a meeting at 3 o'clock, and they say, suck an egg, I call up later and I say, Senator Weber will be there. And they say, how about 3 o'clock on Thursday? And so we've helped each other in that regard. So I'm still handling constituent problems. I got one this morning. I mean, I tell these people I'm not your state senator anymore. But when they end the call by saying I'm absolutely desperate and we need your help, it is not in my nature to let go of somebody's hand.
So what is your biggest concern right now for the state of Oregon? What you see going on?
No courageous leadership and no follow through and too many people doing this. It is
like what is this? What do you mean?
It's always somebody else's fault. The jurisdiction is always somebody else's. Case in point, I went out to a community called Lentz in Portland, in Southeast. Lentz has been disproportionately hard hit by the homeless crime, lawlessness scourge that is raging in Portland. And so I went out, frankly, to ask them for votes when I was running for governor. A couple of months after the election, I got a call from one of their spark plugs out there who said, you liked us when you wanted something. Do you still like us now? And I said, you're damn straight I do. And so I started going out to Lentz meetings. And I'll just give you one example. They have a max stop that has been so infested by homelessness and crime that people can't use it. So I promised them that I would call ODOT and I would call PBOT and I would call the city and try to find out who's going to fix this. The answer is PBOT says it's somebody else's problem. PBOT is Portland Transportation Department. ODOT, Oregon Department of Transportation, says it's the city's problem. Somebody else says in the city it's TriMet's problem. And the upshot of it is with all of these high-paid bureaucrats doing this, saying it's somebody else's fault, the kids still can't use the TriMet stop. Huh. And it's that kind of crap that is just making people nuts. Well, another thing that I'm working on right now is that the city and the county are awash in money for homeless services. And they keep trying these various experiments. They hate each other. Nobody gets along. I'm afraid that we're taking new money and opening new facilities while we're starving the old tried and true of resources. I'm thinking of Rose Haven, Blanchet House, Transition Projects, Street Roots. I'm here speaking on behalf of Helping Hands and the Bybee Lakes Hope Center. Helping Hands has been around in 5 counties for 20 years. We're getting no help from the county, and they've got all this money. They got enough money to buy tinfoil and crack pipes for people, but they don't have enough money to send us a few checks to take more homeless off the streets, both in emergency circumstances as well as providing a path for long-term recovery should the person decide to accept it.
So I know you saw the news item where, and you have more information, so I want this. On thank God she's our former governor, Kate Brown. That's her full title now. I see where one of the inmates she released is now a possible suspect in 4 homicides in Portland.
That is true.
And what the hell is, so how can you, it just, I can't wrap my head around the people that are okay with her releasing these people. And then everybody just looks like Brown puts out a statement that this is horrible. Nothing about like, how about a big fucking, I'm sorry to the families of these 4 people who died. You know?
Well, and it isn't just Kate. Mike Schmidt, the DA in Multnomah County, I don't know to what degree he was complicit in reviewing these cases for commutation or pardon or whatever the hell she did. But there was some really sneaky shit that happened. And I blame him as much for those 4 dead bodies as I do Kate Brown. Now, I'll give you another example that'll just make you crazy.
Crazier.
The DA from hell, Josh Marquis, is a good friend of mine. He's the former DA in Clarksville.
I know Josh very well.
And Josh looks like he needs a rabies shot when he talks about this shit. But the long and the short of it is Josh had convicted a guy named Patrick Harned several times of a heinous murder. He abducted a little 7-year-old girl off the street. Tried to sexually molest her. The story was he couldn't close the deal, and out of anger, he killed her. and then had the stones to go out and join the search party looking for her, knowing that she was dead in his bedroom. Apparently, in some of the gruesome details that came out of this later, he dug the dead body up and attempted to have sex again. And the body was, I mean, it's so gross. And so Josh had been watching meticulously the cases that were supposed to come back for comment by the local DA. And Patrick Harned never showed up. And it was just because Josh is outrageously intellectually curious and madder than hell about the death of this little seven-year-old girl that he finally pieced together the list and realized that a guy who was now Jesse Rana, I can't remember his other assumed name, but he had been allowed to go down to the Snake River facility outside of Ontario, practically in a different time zone, and change his damn name so that he didn't show up on the lists. So when Josh figured out that Patrick Harna was now Rana something else, he called me. I called the governor's alleged public safety policy advisor. And I said, how is it that someone in custody is allowed to change their name? Who gets to give the okie dokie on that? And he said, I'll get back to you. I don't know the answer, which I find absolutely just unbelievable and inexplicable. I'm still waiting for the damn phone call.
Really?
The bottom line is, I was able to find out without waiting for him that the super... Rick?
Yeah.
I just lost the picture.
Okay, you're still on. I still got you going. Okay.
I find it absolutely inexplicable that the superintendent of the facility would allow an inmate to change their name and that then he went on the commutation list. It was fascinating because that story has a happy ending. The current DA, Ron Brown, and the old silverback, Josh Marquis, and a young guy from Oregon Crime Victims Law Center testified, and the parole board turned down Jesse, whatever his name is, Rana, whatever his name is. And so he will be a guest of the state for 4 more years. But that was due to Kate's sloppiness and general lack of attention and Josh's diligence to track this dirtbag down, and he will be a guest of the state for 4 more years. And I have to say, the young attorney with a 2022 bar number, which means he's brand new, fresh-minted right. young attorney, that kid did a remarkable job.
So, Betsy, what is your, if you're sitting down with lawmaker, will you go back into politics, do you think? I mean,
well, I'm in politics pretty much every day. Right after the election, Channel 8 asked me to be their political commentator. And I said, yes. Len Bergstein, who had done that work forever, had regrettably and suddenly died. And so I agreed. The problem is they don't have me on very often. And I have opinions, evidence this show. So I'm now restarting my own podcast called This Week with Betsy Johnson. I got the band back together after the campaign, a guy named Michael Desmond. And we did that show religiously every single week for 15 years. And it was part peel back the curtain on the legislature. It was part Chamber of Commerce. I mean, we broadcast from new fishmonger stores and restaurants and donut shops and stuff like that. And it was part my political analysis. And so we're just now revving that back up. And I fully intend to stay engaged in the public square. I watch with interest that Tina Kotek has now succeeded Kate Brown in being the lowest rated governor in the country.
And, isn't that amazing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's
so.
It's,
so what is that? What does that say about Oregon when you elect these people and then you're still but you know what I mean? It's like people don't even like you. And you don't rate well, but it's like, well, listen, she's got a D in front of her name, so we'll vote for her.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. The registration in this state is so skewed. It's about 25% R, it's about 35% D, and it's over 40% in the hell with all of them. So they're either independent, unaffiliated, Workers' Party, Green, Communist. That makes up that big, massive unaffiliated.
But- But isn't the problem with that group, and not like I'm not picking on them, but especially non-affiliated voters, Kate Brown changed the way now when you go to get your driver's license, you automatically have to be registered. And most of those people don't give a shit. And so they just say non-affiliated. So you've got this whole group of people, and they could be the most powerful voting bloc in Oregon, but a good percentage of them really don't want to participate. They don't care.
That is exactly correct. And it is very difficult to reach them. Trust me, I know, because we tried to reach out to them during my campaign, and they being a mixed bag and a lot of communication that isn't traditional communication like a telephone, they're difficult to reach and they're difficult to motivate. And many of them are just incandescent with rage about how poorly government is working right now.
What do you think, going back and analyzing, what went wrong for you?
Oh, what went wrong for me at the very, I mean, we took off like a rocket. We raised $18 million. Before I ever got into this, we asked people, do you want less partisanship in your politics? Could you stand a nonpartisan governor? Oh, yeah. At the end, everybody, I think, out of fear, ran back to their partisan corners. Tina's people were saying, if you vote for Johnson, you elect Drazen, who was an anti-choice Republican. Drazen's people were saying, if you vote for Johnson, you elect Kotek. And at the end, I think they thought that a vote for me could have been seen as a wasted vote, and they went back to their partisan corners. So in a nutshell, that's it. I ended up with one foot on the dock and one foot in the canoe, and that's all she wrote.
How big a part do you think the Supreme Court decision on abortion played? Because it put that issue right out in front, and you're very honest about your pro-choice point of view. And I think I you know, now I could get myself in trouble. I mean, I'm not supportive of abortion rights as much as you are, but that's what we're Oregonians. We can do this, but that becomes such, they use it out of fear. And people say, cause I had people say to me, well, I would never vote for Betsy Johnson cause she's anti or she's pro abortion. And I'm like, but what about, you know, that's like Mark Hatfield, an interview I heard with him one time. And he said, you know, he and Wayne Morris were both anti-Vietnam War. And everybody now goes, well, no wonder he won. Well, no, at the time, 70% of Oregonians were supportive of the war. And Mark Hatfield and Wayne Moore supported Hatfield as the Republican, and Wayne was the Democrat. And Mark said, Oregonians today would never do that again. They gave me a pass because they said, you know, okay, we're supportive of the war, but we like other things he's doing. Now people have become so isolated on certain issues, it's like, good God, there's other things going on in the world.
Absolutely. And if you and I disagreed in days gone by, we could disagree without being jerks about it. Right. Now, if I disagree with you, I got to grind you into paste to make my point. And I think about the people, I want to complain about the characterization of being pro-abortion. Nobody's pro-abortion. I'm pro a woman's right to exercise some authority over reproductive life. But the long and the short of it is that's become a litmus test, and there are other litmus tests. I wish the Republicans would go back to their core values of fiscal responsibility, accountability in government spending, smaller government, get out of my bedroom, and focus on the things that made the Republican Party attractive to a lot of business people. And the D's are just so far out there in la la land. Yeah. I mean, passing out tinfoil and crack pipes here. And
I had a call from somebody, and they said I haven't confirmed this, but they said in the Albany school district, they have litter boxes in the bathroom for the kids that think that they're animals. No, I don't know this is to be true, but I have heard that in other places in the world. But I mean, we are so sidebarred on all these weird issues, you know, and it's like, when can we get back to government? I don't want government involved in my marriage. I don't want them involved in my savings account.
Your pocketbook, your currency,
my career, my business. I'm so fucking tired of the censorship of places like Facebook and all of them. If I said something, a year ago, I posted a picture of Hunter Biden in a bikini, and flying with balloons over Montana. And they said it was sexual harassment. They pulled me for 60 days. Then about 3 months later, they did the same thing and I didn't repost it. And I don't know how it got there. A week ago, same thing happened again. They pulled, and we need companies, we need these media outlets to be treated like a publisher so that the rest of us, it really is free speech. Because, you know, you've got people on the D side who still don't believe that the laptop's real.
Back to your comment about publisher, there was a time when newspapers had a code of ethics,
right?
When stories had to be double checked, when you had to have reliable sources. Now you just make shit up.
Right.
And it is, I learned the hard way in my campaign how absolutely biased the media is. It's dreadful how bad.
Well, Betsy, that's what I did for 30 years of my career. And I sit here and watch what happens, and I don't watch their news anymore, but I see it online. And I'm like, if I had come back to my office with that, I mean, there was a bias, a pretty liberal bias. I saw it. But if I'd come back and not had both sides of an issue, I remember going to a neo-Nazi rally. And I was like to my boss, why do I have to cover this? And she says, you have to get a soundbite from them and some from the other ones. Well, people today, if I did that, they'd
call
me
a racist. And
It's unbelievable. And people put up with it.
The default is always you're a racist. I just resigned from a board because I was asking questions about their financial statements. And I was told by one of the board members that my questions were racist. I mean, about a balance sheet? What the hell are you talking about? And I believe that it is a fiduciary responsibility of a board of directors to have financial statements that foot and balance and are accountable to donors' wishes. And if asking about those issues was offensive to somebody on the board, that was not a group I could responsibly continue to be associated with. I resigned.
Oh, good for you. No, I'm a homophobe. I'm a transphobe. I'm so many phobes that now I just, it's kind of like that old saying my parents, you know, the crying wolf thing, where it's like they've said it so much, it doesn't even matter anymore because it has no credibility. And but they don't, I think it's starting to turn on them.
You forgot that you're a sexist too, because in your opening credits, I saw that very attractive woman walking towards what might have been a sauna. And obviously you're exploiting women as well.
And as one of
the sisters, I'm offended by that.
And she's my wife, too. So there I'm probably like a dominant male influence showing off my wife's ass.
That is exactly correct.
No. So where do we go? I mean, if you were king, here's my other question. Would you ever run for governor again?
No, I don't see it in the cards. I'm an old.
But you think you could do more damage on the outside than you can on the inside?
I would like to say corrective criticism brings positive change. I would not like to characterize it as damage. Thank you very much.
I call it damage.
I think an unmuzzled Betsy saying the emperor has no clothes has some value in the public square. In addition, I still am damn good at helping people. I had a woman call me this morning. Her teeth are falling out. She's a type 1 diabetic. She's lost her driver's license because she was driving with low blood sugar. She's trapped in an apartment. Her rent on a 2-bedroom apartment is going to go up to $1,500 a month. She's on the raw edge of either a mental breakdown or being homeless because her health is cratering. She's older. And incidentally, the highest cohort of people on the streets right now are older women, which is even more dangerous for them. But I can still help. I think it's in my DNA to do that. But I expect to be a vociferous commenter on the public condition. And you're going to have to scrape me off of your show like getting rid of a barnacle. You've got great listeners. I love talking to you, and I will come back as often as you ask me.
So define for me bravery.
Bravery is something we touched on earlier. You see the problem, you define the problem statement, you begin to put together the people that can effectuate an outcome, and you see it through to the end. Even if the end means we can't fix this. But it can't just be, I hear you, and nothing happens. And we've got to have some people that are willing to take serious political risk to make a point. I mean, there have been a couple of times in my political career where I stood up for something and said, if my political career ends doing X, screw it. I had a happy life before this. I'm pretty good at what I do, but if it costs me this seat, so be it.
Don't you think that's the problem? It is that there's too many people get in there and this becomes their career. And it was your career too, but they're not willing to put it on the line. And so you have all these people go in with big ideas and I'm gonna you know, be my own person. You really were. And I think there's not a person in the legislature who will ever credibly say that you did not rub people the wrong way if it wasn't the truth.
Oh, I left a trail of dead bodies behind me in effectuating outcomes that I thought were important.
Where did you get that? What made you like that?
I had parents who pretty much said to both my sister and me, you can do whatever you damn well want. You got to tell the truth. You got to stand up and be counted. It's your obligation to help where you're able. And both my sister and I ended up representing the United States on United States flying teams. My sister was on the U.S. aerobatic team for two tours, flying all over the world. I was on the U.S. helicopter team for two tours, flying all over the world. And I think that we were just expected to be participants. And now both of us have birthdays that start with really icky numbers, and we're both still participating. I expect to be carried out of my office. They'll take a door off the hinges and put my little porky body on it and carry me out. I like what I do.
So how do you want to be remembered?
You know, I'm stealing this from Governor McCall. On his gravestone, it just says Governor Tom McCall and his dates, and then it says he cared. And every year at Christmas, because he's buried in the Redmond Cemetery where I grew up, we go out to decorate the grave of a woman that worked for my parents for years. And every year I make sure she has a wreath on her grave. We also take a wreath to Governor McCall. Sometimes we're staggering around out there in the snow trying to remember which row he's in because the snow is so deep. But his headstone is pretty poignant and it captures his essence perfectly. He cared.
I told my wife, and I never knew where I got this, but I said, you know, I want to be cremated, but I want a headstone because I love cemeteries because history is buried in those places, people's lives that really mattered. Yep. And I just want to say, Rick Dancer, when I was born, when I died, and then it just says he tried. And yep. I was kind of like, where'd that come from? And one day I pulled up a story that I did years ago when I was a news anchor. And it was on a guy, I called him Mr. Sisters in Sisters, Oregon, an old guy who, if you needed something fixed, he fixed everything. And in the 2 hours we shot that video, I kind of fell in love with this dude. I mean, we were just like, I said, you know what? And he was close to 100. And I said, if you were like 20 years younger and I was 20 years older, I bet we'd be best friends. He goes, I was thinking the same thing. On that story, I asked him, how would you be remembered? And his answer was, he tried.
He tried.
And I went, oh, he spoke that into my life, like this guy. And I was like, that is the coolest thing ever. Here's something else I want you to do, because I really respect you. And I love your love for Oregon. How do you define Oregon?
You know, I was thinking about that when you were talking about the old guy and sisters. My father came up into the Oregon country to be a timber surveyor for his father. And my father lived in the Sisters Hotel for a number of years. And I was thinking about some of the old timers and sisters, a wonderful old woman named Maida Bailey, who was near 100 when she died. His sisters had a population of a couple 300 then. And I remembered as a child having a population of between 600 and 800. I was just there last weekend and it was awful. The traffic was terrible. It now has a population approaching 4,000. And how one defines an Oregonian is changing as our place is changing. And as more people, I refer to them as California refugees, are coming to Oregon, having sold a house, you know, a split level ranch in Ventura and coming up here with $500,000. We are changing in our attitudes. Bend was sort of predictably Republican for a long time, and now that's anything but the truth. My mother thought Bend went to hell when they tore down the Pilot Butte Inn, and I sort of think she was right. But Oregon is changing. And until we have hit bottom, I don't think we're going to start that trajectory back up. They always say that a drunk has to hit bottom before they'll go seek help. And I think Oregon is on that trajectory. We're going to get so bad that at some point somebody's going to say, this is so far from the Oregon that I knew and loved. We have to do something different.
Okay, I got you.
Now you're back. I said, that's the price you pay for living in the boonies in Montana.
I had to hook it up to my phone. So
yeah, right. You got a little mouse in a treadmill out there just running like hell to keep the signal going.
Okay. So go back and answer that question is, what do you, how do you define Oregon? And you said you were in Sisters. I got the Sisters Hotel part. I'll just edit out that black space and we'll be fine.
Sisters is, for me, a sort of symptom as well as a symbol of what's happening in Oregon. We used to be a pretty, I don't never know whether the word's homogeneous or homogenous group, but we defined ourselves in that kind of McCall tradition. We were independent individualists. We made our own choices. We left each other alone. There was a certain sort of laissez-faire about how we interacted with each other. As Oregon is becoming more and more populated with people coming from another place and bringing their ideas and wanting to bend Oregon to their will, so that they have the beautiful view of the three sisters from Sisters, but all of their Los Angeles politics. Yeah. We're seeing that grinding noise erasing much of what used to be Oregon. I have to be honest with you. I've had a couple of moments in the last little, 5 years when I've wondered just how proud am I of this place as I'm watching it deteriorate as rapidly as it is. And nothing like a trip to downtown Portland to convince you we're damn near the bottom.
Yeah.
And I think we don't start recapturing Oregon until just like a drunk has to hit rock bottom before they can begin that trip back up. Oregon's getting pretty close right now with the rampant crime, the deterioration of our urban core, and business people talking nationally, if not internationally, about their disdain for this place where the regulatory world is a labyrinth that you cannot make it through. Politicians right. don't help you. They just have their hand in your pocket at election time. And I think we're going to hit bottom pretty damn soon. And maybe that changes our politics. And again, you know, I don't care if it's Republicans or Democrats, but right. knock off this crazy shit.
Well, you know, and it's so funny. It's not funny. It's disgusting. It's like, you know, we've got city councils and saying, you know, we need more affordable housing. So you put more rules and you put more service charges so that they have to have a curb and 6.3 trees and this and that to the beautification project. And I understand a nice development, but it's like you've taken away everything looks plastic. And then you say, well, we need more affordable housing. How the hell do you get more affordable housing when you have all these, you know, $80,000 worth of development costs that go in? Okay, now we can start building the houses. Or, you know, if you want to get on a tangent, we won't allow anybody to cut any timber. We have fires burning the forests down right now in Southern Oregon because they don't clean up, go in there and clean up after themselves when there's a problem. And now we wonder why all this, we don't salvage on federal lands. We won't salvage any forest timber. So we let it sit there and rot, which creates more carbon. And the fires create more carbon. And yet we're supposed to be carbon neutral by something, but we don't care about that because nuclear power is not even looked at in Oregon. And Eugene is a nuclear free zone. So all that tells me is you're stupid because that's the energy source. That's the cleanest. So if you care about carbon in the air, then you have to look at nuclear power. But Oregon is just kind of fucked up about all that.
And you forgot that Eugene wants to ban natural gas and they want to ban it in other places. This metastasis of goofy ideas from Eugene and Portland to other places, the contagion is just nuts.
It sounds so good to people. And I think that's what you're talking about is people come into the state and they don't look at what this did to California and how it ruined them. That's why they left there. And then they come here, but they forget to leave their politics at the border.
That's part and parcel of the problem. It's really, really discouraging. And I think there are more commentators on it. You keep beating the drum about it. Part of it is an electorate that remains uninformed. I'm working with some others right now to try to see if we can make some adjustments in ballot measure 110 that functionally legalize drugs in this state. And there is no stick to send anybody to treatment. And this bullshit about we've treated 60,000 people. No, you haven't. You've answered the phone maybe 60,000 times, but has anybody gotten treatment or services? Nope. And we got the city and the county passing out their crack pipes and their tinfoil. And then when the uproar, this, you'll love this. When the uproar was so excessive about what crap that was, they printed up a how-to manual on, how do I say this delicately? Introducing fentanyl into the human body through other orifice other than a hypodermic needle.
Oh my! So we're teaching people.
Printed at taxpayer expense.
So Betsy, I'm doing a project with the timber industry, and it's called "The Truth About Timber." And we've released our first one with Jay Browning down in Astoria.
Yeah.
And we had over 120,000 views so far. And people love it because the industry people are going, that's me. I do care about the forest. I do care about the woods. And I think, you know, this is, people criticize me a lot because I left Oregon, but I'm 64. And my wife and I both said, you know what? I ran for office here. I thought I could do some great things for Oregon. I don't think Oregon wants great things. And I don't have time right now to stick. I want to go find some other things in my life that I want to dream about. But I can still fight for Oregon from somewhere else. And that's what we're doing with these pieces. I just love showing people that the ignorance that's going on, and hopefully, you know, there's a whole bunch of really great people who are seeing it and understanding. If you want to take this back, you have to start basing things on real science and things other than how it makes me feel. Because I think that's what Oregon has become, is this state. Oh, you know, it's so cool to be weird. Well, yeah, it's cool to be weird until it gets just creepy, stupid. And, you know, the first question I get in Montana from anyone, when I say I moved from Oregon, they said, did they really legalize drugs?
Yeah,
they can't believe that Oregon voters did that.
They legalized drugs and Oregonians supported it. I didn't. I campaigned against it. I voted against it. I spoke out against it. And you go downtown and watch guys shooting up and just falling over in the street. It is amazing to me. We took away drug courts. We took away any incentivization on the part of a judge to send somebody into a treatment court. And if they could get clean, they would lose the convictions against them. There is no incentive to get better.
Yeah.
And with that comes all the crime and the, you know, I drove my car downtown the other day, and I think of the chassis of my car as the gift wrap on the catalytic converter. It pisses me off. I wonder every time when I come out of a building, is a damn car going to be there? It's gross.
Okay. So the last thing, cause I know you got stuff you got to do. I know, your schedule's busy. What do you recommend to Oregonians watching this, about involvement or speaking out or, I mean, what? I shouldn't even put words.
Pay attention. Stop being a lemming. Don't be a herd animal. Don't believe everything that your party tells you. Think for your friggin' self. Be informed. Right now, the political, well, you know this better than anybody, but the political firmament is starting. People are announcing for various and sundry offices. Drazen is starting some 501c4 to be able to talk to Oregonians about the problem. For me, that's probably a launch pad for another office. Yep. Tobias Reed has just announced for Secretary of State. We've got people dropping out of the legislature, seeking higher office. Our congressional race for the Lori Chavez de Remer seat is going to be crowded with Democrats. And God, what a bunch of them. I mean, Lynn Peterson, it isn't good enough to screw up Metro. Now she wants to screw up Congress. Give me a break. And she's presiding over some of this homeless crisis with little or no accountability. But I would ask them to pay attention. And you don't have to ride for a brand. There's something uniquely liberating about not having that partisan label. The only downside is, and there are people in Oregon that are trying to change this right now, is that unaffiliated like me are disallowed from voting in the primary. I don't know why the taxpayers support these closed club primaries where the R's pick their guy and the D picks their guy. And if you're unaffiliated, you're screwed.
And what Oregonians don't understand, and I campaigned on this when I was running for Secretary of State, you are paying for like a non-affiliated voter like myself and you, our tax dollars are paying for them to run their business, the Republican and Democrat business. So they say we can't participate, then give me back my frickin' money.
Yeah.
I don't want to pay for your, and I pay for their little vote, their precinct elections,
yeah,
which is just bizarre. So they have their little club election, who's going to be Papa Smurf and who's going to be Mama Smurf, and I have to pay for it. So
yeah,
how about this? If you want to have a closed primary, let the parties pay for it, get it out of the hands
agree.
Of everybody else.
And then you can invite anybody you want to come into your clubhouse, but you're damn well paying for it. The May primary, when I was unaffiliated, was the first election since I was able to vote that I couldn't vote in because I chose to not be affiliated.
And people say, oh, the bullshit is too. They say, the parties say, well, you can just become a Democrat or a Republican for the election, and then you can vote and switch it back when you're done. Why should I have to change who I am? How about my personal identity pronouns? Do I have to change my pronouns to fit your model of what's going on? And I can't just be Rick Dancer and vote as an Oregonian because that is but who comes in and fights it? The parties, the corporations, the unions, they all come in and say no because they're so afraid. Maybe what Oregon needs is to get out of the business of being fear-based and start going back to what the pioneers were. Could you imagine, Betsy, today, the Oregon pioneers coming? They would have left they would have left Missouri, got about 10 miles. The ride's too bumpy. The wheels, where's the rubber wheels? No, I'm not going to throw my rocking chair off. I don't care. I want to take that all the way to Oregon. Oh, there's no food. I don't want cholera. They would have never made it to Oregon. They were tough people who came here. And if I say that online, then they start going, yeah, you racist. It's like, oh my God. No, they were tough people who formed this place that now you love to come. These people love to come here and look at Mount Hood and experience coffee and culture, but you didn't have to pay the frickin' price for it, did you?
Well, because
you came here on a plane.
And the culture piece of it is, I have just written this little article that I think the Pamplin system has picked up, talking about the choices that the legislature made. I've always maintained that budgets are priorities. It's a listing of priorities. So the legislature funded for-profit bars and nightclubs and Revolution Hall. We funded them and cut funding for crime victims or any of the big cultural venues like the Shakespearean Festival that is just hanging on by a toenail. Wow. And then just before we end, you mentioned your run for Secretary of State. Boy, I bet you looked with pride on that office as we watched Shamia Fagan drag it down to the lowest of depths. Oh. I served with her, and that's a smart lady. How a smart person could be that dumb. Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. And it underscores the amount of, I think, just raw corruption that exists right now with respect to cannabis in this state.
Well, and what's so fun, so disgusting about that whole story is I wasn't making enough as a Secretary of State and I had to have another income. You're the second to the top official in Oregon. And you're going to go take a second job that's obviously lobbying for it's, I mean, how, but what makes me even madder though, Betsy, is that there's people out there that would probably still vote for her because she's a Democrat.
And a single mom and struggling. For all of her, I was just barely scraping by, but I could afford to charge the taxpayers for my pet fees in fancy hotels. Stayed at 4-star places. I mean,
what I think the general public doesn't understand, and you and I do, is you have to, when you run for office or when you're a public official, you have to keep track of everything. I mean, they're like people going through, and especially when I ran, there was people going, they were trying to get me to do something a little edgy. And I had Carol Russell was this tough little lady down there. She was a broad. She was tough down in Bandon, Oregon. And she was like, you are running for Secretary of State. You're not doing anything even questionable because they will come back at you. And that they don't even care because you get caught. I know you don't, they don't want to get caught, but to take a risk like that, I just can't even imagine to have your whole reputation blown up like that. And I mean, but I think they learn that the public's very, very forgiving and forgets very quickly, and the next election will come up and she could probably put her name back on and they'd come up with some excuse why she's okay.
Well, I hope to God you're wrong, because that kind of public fall from grace, I mean, that is Icarus flying too close to the sun, and that should not be forgiven by the voters. No. That was a breach of the public trust.
Betsy Johnson, that's probably one of the most fun conversations we've had in a long time.
I enjoyed every minute of it. So well, have me back.
No, I will. And let me know, like send me an email when your show gets kicked off, you know, going, your podcast, and I'll put a little notice out to people that if they want to catch up with you, that's what they can do.
Cool. The other thing I'm going to send you is an address for a woman named Jen Hammaker.
Oh, no, she's one of my sponsors of the Timber Story.
Oh, great.
She's on my, she's one of our supporters. She and her mom are one of the sponsors.
They're terrific people. And this HCP, the Habitat Conservation Plan, that she's working so hard against is a travesty. And to have the chair of the Board of Forestry say in print and in public, it's not going to change the timber cut is an out and out lie.
It's a huge lie. I've had her on the show three times talk about that very issue. And if Oregonians don't pay attention, there will be no rural Oregon. And the biggest threat is your section up there in, I mean, Astoria. You guys are, I mean, there's other parts of Oregon. The whole state will be affected, but you guys are really going to get hammered.
Well, the Tillamook and the Clatsop State Forests are in Senate District 16, and we are going to get hammered.
Yeah. Betsy Johnson, always good talking to you. Take care of yourself.
Thank you. Have me back.
All right. I will. Okay. See you later. Okay. Again, that's Betsy Johnson. Boy, that was fun. That's why you like to do the job. That's a good day. I was excited to come in and do that. And then when I heard Jordan Peterson talking about having courageous friends and brave friends, I'm going to tell you a really quick little story. Betsy had to get out of the green room, but Dave Frohnmayer, another good friend of mine, died a few years ago. Betsy Johnson went to the memorial service and got up, because she and Dave were very good friends, got up, and all the sitting governors and former governors, there was like eight of them, all Democrats, sitting there. And she took them to task at that memorial service, saying how badly they had treated David Frohnmayer when he ran for governor. It was the most magical moment for me, because for a guy who believes in the truth, that's a big thing for me. That the truth will set you free. She set something free that day. Okay, so tomorrow night, let's see, because this is going to air on Wednesday. Tomorrow night, Michael Bryson disappeared a few years ago. His parents have some ideas of what's going on. We'll talk about that. But we're also going to talk about an event coming up to support the family and support with the Michael Bryson Foundation and all that kind of stuff. So we'll have that tomorrow night. And Bill London will be here with your newscast. I'm Rick Dancer. Thanks for joining me. Share this on your page, because some of the social media outlets, imagine they don't like me. I'm such a nice guy. I don't understand why. And I want to thank our sponsors, Fairway Mortgage Company out of Helena, and Dr. Michael Bratlin, Chris Dental Family Dentistry, Eugene, Oregon.